This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome, welcome. I am so excited that you've joined us today. And what a really, really great show we have, because we're going to be talking, I'll be talking with a woman who has really become a friend of mine, and she is quite a wonderful, outstanding lady, beautiful outside and in. You might recognize Sandra Dee Robinson from her roles in daytime television, starting with her very first television role as young Amanda Corey on the long-running soap opera Another World, which she played for a total of 9 years. Sandra remains a familiar face in daytime with other major roles in Sunset Beach, Bold and the Beautiful, General Hospital, Days of Our Lives, as Dr. Charlotte Taylor. Now, currently, Sandra plays Christine, another slightly obsessive psychotherapist, on the web series The Bay. So, Sandra Dee Robinson, welcome. What is this with the obsessive psychotherapist?
I don't know what it is. I was getting typecast there for a while. There were two things that I did repeatedly. That was be a psychotic psychotherapist and die. I died a lot for a period of years. My sister thought that was really funny. I died in very creative ways. I was hatcheted to death. I had my face peeled off on Criminal Minds. There was like, you know, I guess your phases. And I jokingly said that being a dead person in a cold, what do you call it, examiner's office, you know, where they roll you out on the metal thing and playing dead, that was actually one of the hardest things I've ever done. You're shivering. Dead people don't shiver.
Okay, so this gorgeous face of yours gets peeled off. They had to pick you.
You know,
I guess that made it worse, because, you know, nobody's like, no, not that face.
I don't know. I wasn't the only one in the storyline. I think that was a theme. You know, Criminal Minds does it, the psycho killers, and they get into the brain and figure out why they do these things. So, yeah,
right.
It was one of those. And anyway, my sister thought it was quite funny that I died so creatively in so many ways.
Yeah, sisters would think it's funny that their sister gets, you know, their sister dies. It's like, ha-ha, you're done.
Yeah.
So now yeah. You have had quite, I mean, so as you were saying, you were in Criminal Minds. You've also been in shows like Secret Life of an American Teenager, 2 and a Half Men, which just went off the air. You've done quite a bit of television. But before that, you also, your career started very early with pageants as and at age 13. Tell us about that, how you got started.
I actually, from a small town outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, few of us are from that area, Christina Aguilera, James Malinchak, those are the celebrities that I can call to mind, Gene Kelly, I mean, we're really going back, Shirley Jones, that shows you how many folks I know from Pittsburgh, but seriously, I grew up in an area far, far away from Hollywood or anything like that. But I did get noticed by somebody there in the local town, and I actually started modeling when I was 11.
Wow.
And when I was my first thing was holding up a Muppet for a local, like, Walgreens or CVS kind of, like, drugstore ad. It was really funny. But holding up some toy. But, yeah, it was kind of a fluke thing that I got that opportunity, but I kind of found my solace in hiding behind characters and creating characters, and that gave me the strength to feel like I was being noticed, kind of. So I liked that. And at one point I said to my family, I said to my dad, like, look, there's an ad in the paper for Miss Teen Pennsylvania, Miss Teen All-American Pennsylvania. And he kind of said something to me like, you'd never win. In a well-meaning way. I mean, he didn't want to see me disappointed. And I thought, well, what if I did? So I sent a picture in, one of my modeling pictures, you know, that I still couldn't believe that I was doing that, because I thought, for sure, they're going to look at me one day and go, oh, we didn't mean you. We meant the woman behind you. But I had this photo. I sent it in, and I actually won that pageant. And I think, in retrospect, I wondered how I did it because I was so shy. I think I acted as if I was a pageant girl. That was how I did it. I acted as if. And then that led to me taking the nerve and, you know, doing it again at Miss USA Pennsylvania, and then going, winning that and going to Miss USA.
Wow.
But I was 17 when I did that. So 16 and 17 were my pageant years. And I was really, so funny. I was really just acting as if I didn't have any deep-rooted confidence. I was extremely shy and really low self-esteem. And I was being bullied, actually, at the time when I was in high school. So it was quite a paradox.
Bullied by girls, boys?
Girls.
Yeah. God, they could be mean, can't they? They could
be
terrible.
Yeah, really mean. Yeah. And it was made worse by the fact that I wasn't raised in a super positive environment. I mean, where I'm really on, as you know, I just co-hosted the 24-hour live stream of Live Happy, and I've kind of been on this happiness psychology, this positive psychology path for a while, and incorporating it into my current business in many ways, including bringing nature in and all that kind of stuff. So I've kind of been on this for a while, but at that time I really wasn't surrounded with positivity. And so it was made worse when the bullying started by that. I didn't have the support at home. I was kind of told, if I said, you know, the girls are beating me up today, because they would get physical, she'd say, oh, just laugh at them.
Who would say that? Your mom would say that?
My mother would say, just laugh at them. And I wasn't, you know, that doesn't always work.
But what would you have wanted her
to say? Vision.
Sandra,
it's interesting. Yeah, what would I wanted her to say? I would have wanted her to say, and honestly, from that age point of view, that they were wrong and I was okay. But I didn't get that. I didn't you're okay. You're good enough. I didn't get, you know, my husband grew up very positive, and his family was like, you can do anything you want to do. You're capable. You're, you know, it was like listening to a Joe Osteen message. He grew up with this. You can do it. You can do it. You deserve to have everything you want. And I was raised with, don't even try. Mm. You're not good enough. There was no positive spoken over me.
So here they're telling, you know, you started out by saying that your dad said, don't go out for the pageant because you won't win. And you said, said that it was out of a place where he didn't want you to get hurt.
To be hurt. I do think, in retrospect, I do think that was why he would say things like that.
Yeah.
He had a pattern of saying things like that. And there were two reasons. One, I think they didn't want to tell me they didn't have the money for me to take certain lessons and things like that. I think there was a bit of, we can't tell her we don't have the money, but in retrospect, I don't think we did. Like, I wanted to take lessons in singing and things like that, and I was just told, you can't hold a note.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have many, many octave range. I actually do have a voice, but I'm still afraid to use it. I took 7 years of vocal coaching, and I still have that fear of using my voice. I use it to speak, but when it comes to singing, I'm still really kind of shy. Even when I sing in church, I'm really shy because it still plays out. Those words are so powerful. Maya Angelou said words are things, and they really are, especially for certain ages. You know, at that age, 11, 12, 13, 14, teens, they're really formative. It's really important. And in retrospect, I'm not upset with what was spoken over me, because I do think that in his own way, he was doing it to protect me. That was the other portion of it, was don't go out there and get disappointed. He didn't want to see me hurt. But he loved it when I won.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, because on a, you know, I have to say, selfishly, then he could go brag about you to his friends, right? So let me ask.
Right? It made him happy. Yeah, it made him happy. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I want to go back a little bit. You started modeling when you were 11. 13 through 16, 17, those are critical years. Those are like the worst. I'm telling you, in my mind, 13, 14 is like the worst time to be a female, to be a girl.
It's just
so hard. And even boy, I mean, I raised two kids, and I see what they went through in middle school and then high school and the bullying that they'd had to endure, and myself as well. But when you're out there as a model, you know, that at a very young age, you are told that your looks really matter, like what's on the inside.
Yeah.
So tell me how that felt for you. I mean, maybe back then you don't know, but in retrospect, what did that do for your own self-image?
in retrospect, I had a double message going, and it was probably one of the worst messages. I fell into very typical category for that avenue of presentation, meaning modeling. I ended up with an eating disorder. I over-exercised and under-ate. I could tell you every caloric the caloric content of any food, even told to this day. I can tell you the caloric content of a lot of foods, just off the top of my head, and how many sit-ups it would take, I thought, for that, for me to burn that off. I became very obsessed with it. And this was reinforced, actually, by my mom. She had always wanted to be a model, and she wasn't able to make that happen. So when I had the opportunity to, she really pushed for that. And she really supported my over-exercising. I don't think she knew anything was really wrong with that. It was wrong. I ended up messing up my digestive system for many, many years, well into my 20s, almost till the age of 30. I was still dealing with repercussions of what I had done to my body. And what I had done to my head lasted even longer. Yeah. You know, the negative self-talk and everything going against that. And I would never be thin enough because I'm not built that way. I'm not built to be a supermodel. I'm a curvy girl. I have hips. I have muscle butt. I mean, it's just hereditarily, I will never be Kate Moss. And that's who I wanted to be. I looked at Kate Moss and said, well, I can be that. And I kept trying to be that. And so right off the bat, I was going the wrong direction. I was trying to be something that I wasn't. Yeah. And in a very critical environment, it just compounded, and then the bullying on top of it. So it was really, you know, speaking to someone today just a little bit ago, a woman in Canada who is associated with a wonderful nonprofit event up there where they are trying to create sensationalism around women, you know, or it's a young girls becoming women at that time of their life when they're actually going into the early teens, just exactly what we're talking about here. She said in certain cultures that's celebrated. But it's not celebrated here in North America. And I thought, you know, that's true. And that time, that was the worst time. Like you said, that was the worst time for me. Yeah. There was bullying. There was the get out there and show yourself. And my mom really reinforced the show your looks. In fact, she downplayed my intelligence. She said, don't let boys know that you're smart because then they won't like you.
Mm. Boy, I went through that too.
And
go ahead.
You did? You had that too?
Well, my dad, I remember I was, I didn't look like you, but I could tell you that my dad, I had a crush on this guy and we were going to go play tennis. And my dad told me, well, don't beat him. You know, you got to let him win. But
wow.
You see, it's shocking when you hear it from me, but you went through a similar thing.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Don't let them know you're smart. And I believed that. Do you know how? Because I thought that's how I'm going to get accepted. I'm accepted because I am unintimidating, but I have to be pretty. I have to wear high heels. I have to look sexy. I have to be perfect. Mm. I have to be thin. I have to be perfect, and then I'll be accepted. Then I'll be loved. That's really what it comes down to. Then I'll be loved. Mm. And when you're that, for me, I think for a lot of teenage years, women. I don't know about boys, but women, girls in particular, I think. They need that sense of belonging and that sense of being loved. And I have a few friends that are raising their girls beautifully. And I just look at them and go, wow, that's really empowering. I mean, one of my friends, her daughter was getting bullied. And, yeah, she was affected by it, of course. But when she got home, she had that reinforcement at home, and that was a safe place for her. And sadly for me and maybe for a lot of other girls, there is no real safe place. So to see what this woman, for instance, in Canada is doing, I thought was just beautiful. You know, they're called Chai Days, I believe, and it's all about that movement into womanhood and how beautiful it is and how, you know, girl power and all of that. I didn't have that. And I'd love to be able to spread that knowledge and that confidence at that age and that ability to really appreciate who you are and where you come from. And if your hair is curly, love it. If your hair is straight, love it. If you're skinny, love it. If you're fat, you know, deal with it and love it. And I think there's such empowerment that can be given at that age. Took me a while.
And you know, and at that age, I have to tell you, it's an inherent human nature to need to belong, to want to belong to something. So that's inherent. But particularly at that age, the thing that I feel about you is my gut is you were being told, like you're out on, you know, doing these pageants and you're being told by strangers that you're beautiful before you figured out who you were. You were being told what you were and who you were before you
yes.
knew.
Yes.
Am I,
and I
does
think
that,
that
does that resonate? Yeah.
That you were told, I was told what I was. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I had parents that really, you know, knowing my father's upbringing, my mom still isn't really clear with her upbringing, but knowing my father's upbringing, which we only learned when he was about to pass away, by the way, knowing where he came from, I look at that and go, oh, that makes me understand so much about how they raised me. And, you know, my sister and my brother are much older than I am, 14 and 18 years older. So I was sort of raised with an only kid. I don't know how they raised my brother and sister as much as I know how they raised me. And knowing where they came from, yes, I understand it now. And I it's good for me to understand it because I can look back and go, oh, okay, they did the best they could. But there were things that still, like you said, they still stuck with me. That whole thing of don't let them know you're smart.
Yeah.
I believe that, and I followed that to the T so much that I actually started to think that I was stupid.
Mm.
I acted stupid. At a certain time, I acted stupid. And looking back, I'm like, wow, I said those things. And even though I knew better, I played dumb. And if I see a girl in her her early 20s doing that now, I would want to slap her head off her shoulders because I know that it's wrong. And do you know that it was not that long ago that I realized that my IQ is actually 162?
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, listen, we have to take a short break. I hate to take a break because there's so much to get to. but we will be back in just a moment talking to Sandra D. Robinson. Oh, my God. What a life she's had. Soap opera star, TV star, and yet the road has been rough. So we'll be here and we'll hear more from her in just a moment.
Hi, this is Steve Gibb, the host of Thriving Entrepreneur. You can listen to us Tuesdays, noon Eastern, on the EWN Radio Network. I want you to know you are uniquely brilliant, created for a purpose. The world needs you, and we want to help. Listen to me and my guest Tuesdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the EWN Radio Network as we help you learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who've been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called accelerated networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
Welcome back. I am so thrilled to have as my guest today Sandra D. Robinson. She is a TV star, and which sounds all glamorous, right? Well, not so much. And we've just learned in the last segment that it was a pretty rough road as a teenager in the world of pageantry, and which caused Sandra to have, you know, she had an eating disorder that was terrible. She had negative thoughts. The last thing, Sandra, you said was that you played dumb. So, because you were basically told that your looks and beauty is everything. So, you know, I have to tell you that I have a my grandmother, who's passed now, and her sister, who is in her, he's 98. My grandmother,
wow.
It was the two of them, one was told they're the brains, and one was the brains and the other was the beauty. And they lived to that. I mean, my aunt, her sister, who was the brains, quote the brains, she went, I mean, at 98, she was actually went to college. She has 4 degrees, you know. And my grandmother, you know, got married and had children, you know, and was a housewife. It's so, not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, it's so interesting how we are told what we are and we play to that.
Yes.
So let's go ahead.
Now we know better. You know,
we know
I think I think now we have the ability to appreciate who we are and who our kids are. I mean, I don't have children of my own. I have a 54-year-old husband that's with big kids, so I'm good there. But I watch my friends with their kids, and the ones that I'm the most impressed with, they know, like my girlfriend that has 3 daughters, she knows that they are all very unique and very different. She knows what their strengths are, and even when they're acting up, she sees why they're doing it and works with them and talks it through. And that's a beautiful thing. It's very empowering to be able to do that with your kids. If I have influence over, you know, I have a goddaughter that we were very close with for a while. Now she's off at college. And when she was around, I would always try to take that. You know, that I know what it's like to be on the other side. I just try to find the positive aspects of situations and find the blessings. And if a girl, your friend, you know, turns on you or whatever, then you sit there and go, okay, what'd you learn from this? And, you know, you see that you're better than that. And those are conversations that I never had when I was going through that. So I think it's really important to constantly reaffirm who the kid is, the teenager, the child is, and who you are. I mean, even as an adult, I find that I was an adult before I knew who I was. I was just pretending to be what I was told I was. I'm still learning. I think we never stop learning.
Never.
Exactly who we are, and, you know, in transforming into the better version of what God designed us to be.
And I think
like that.
It changes,
oh, by the way, the 160, the intelligence issue. I found when I moved one time, I found some old records of my SAT scores. Still believing that I was stupid. I remember I had gone into, telling me you're stupid. I actually believed I was stupid because then I had people telling me what I was. I said, well, that's stupid. You're stupid. And so I believed it. I said, you're right. I am stupid. I looked at my SAT scores and I went, that's not stupid. I got that on my SAT scores. Mm. And then I went into it a little bit further, and that's when I discovered, you know what? That's wrong. And isn't that amazing how we can disown who we really are? Because someone tells us something, and we can own it to the point that we actually become that.
Yeah. I remember having early on in my career, I was working at NBC in New York, behind the scenes in news, and I remember it was like this overnight shift, and we would all go down to Hurley's, which is like the NBC, you know, right behind Rockefeller Center, and we'd all go down there early in the morning after the overnight shift and like drink beer and, you know, eat hamburgers at like 9 a.m, right? And I remember thinking, you know, having fun and telling jokes. I was always like love to laugh and things, and I remember telling, I forget who it was, maybe my therapist at the time. That cat's out of the bag. And I remember saying something to the effect of, oh, yeah, I have fun. And they all laugh at me and they all like me. And he said, well, what about your intelligence? What about your abilities? And it's funny, since then, I mean, I think I've always been driven, but I remember very deliberately turning that around and then focusing heavily on my work ethic and you know, diving in, you know, that it's the work that mattered. So I know exactly how you feel, you know, how that could be. We just want to be liked. Now we take you from your teenage years. You're in your 20s. So take us from there. Where are you in your 20s?
Living in both. Well, actually, that's when I moved to L.A. So I lived in New York for the, like, 21, 22, by 24, I had moved out to L.A., and there was a period there where I was going back and forth and working, which sounds really sexy. I thought, you know, I'm bi-coastal. It sounds so sexy. It's so not. It's exhausting.
It's not glamorous, right?
No, not glamorous at all. But it was fun, and I'm glad I did it. And, you know, I'm glad I lived in New York. I was also kind of glad to get out of there. I'm not really a city girl, so for me it was good. I really liked L.A., but I was still stepping into and finding out who I was. For sure. When I got to LA, I really hit the ground with a lot of auditioning, because in New York, I got really lucky. I would go out for things and I would book them. And I was very gainfully employed in New York on one show for a very long time. I got into the audition process. And when you're not grounded really deeply in who you are, your self-confidence is very superficial. Mm-hmm. So it's that whole act as if. And I kind of did that, but it didn't really land didn't really work for me whenever I would be under stress. And what happens with auditioning with beautiful women, if you're not really grounded in who you are and only knowing what you are, I'd walk in and there's a lot more beautiful what's in the room, if you know what I mean. There's always going to be somebody taller, thinner, more blonde, more sexy, bigger boobs, longer legs. There's always going to be somebody that outdoes you. And it was a great lesson for me, because after a period of time, I mean, I did well. I hung in there. I did well. I kept myself employed as an actor. And I said to someone even today, I watched a waitress pile all of the trays on one arm and walk off like that. And I laughed. I'm like, I think that's the only reason I succeeded as an actor, because if my alternative was to be a waitress, I would have starved, because I could never do that. So fortunately, I did support myself being an actor, going basically from show to show, and I was very fortunate to do that for so long. But at the same time, I did get to a point where they told me now that I was something different. You are now not the sexy girl. That I wasn't that what anymore. Now my what was, you're going to be going out for young mom. Mm. Well, I didn't know what that was. I couldn't identify with that. I was used to playing what I had played. I wasn't used to playing young mom things. I wasn't around kids. I was actually afraid of children. I didn't have a great relationship going with my own mother, so I didn't even have anything to model that after. And I wasn't booking. When I wasn't booking as much, I started to beat myself up, and all those negative things that the bullies told me back in the early years came back. Mm-hmm. It was the, well, you are stupid. Well, you are a bitch. Well, people don't like you. All those things, believe it or not, that stuff came back up, and that turned into desperation. Then it was me walking in, and this is like anybody walking into an interview. If you walk in with a desperation, you don't even have to open up your mouth. You'll lose it.
Yeah.
So I walked into the audition. Instead of, I'm here, I walked in the audition going, please give me the job, please give me the job, please give me the job.
Mm.
And that's not the way to walk into anything. Even now when I work with my entrepreneurs, I work with my clients, and they're going in to pitch something, or they're going in to present something to a possible joint venture partner or an investor. You can't walk in with that. Please give me, please give me, please give me, please. And that's where I was. And I ended up, there were a lot of other circumstances going on in my life as well. I was manifesting stuff all around me that was not really positive. I had a relationship that kind of went sour. I learned what addiction was, not firsthand, but being somebody that was connected with somebody that was dealing with addiction. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I learned. And I learned sympathy for people that are going through it, for sure. I also learned sympathy when that person turned violent with me in the relationship. I learned sympathy of people, you know, women that stay in abusive relationships. I didn't stay very long, but this was a time of lessons for me. And in the process, I went from making about $500,000 a year to 7,000.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So the lessons we learn, right?
How did you survive in L.A. on $7,000 a year? I mean,
I became homeless. I was homeless. But I wasn't, let's put it in perspective, I wasn't homeless. I could have very easily been literally on the street. But I went sofa to sofa to sofa to sofa, and then an older gentleman friend that I knew from the neighborhood, his mother had passed away, and the room where she had stayed was not clean, and there was nothing in it. But I put an air mattress on the floor, and I lived there with the remains of my belongings in boxes, and just tried to make my car payment until somebody that I knew said, come on out. And I couldn't go anywhere because I didn't afford to buy any food, but she said, oh, come with me to a barbecue. So I dressed up sort of cute. I went to this barbecue, and the girl that was
running
the barbecue
had a really
cute.
Wait, I want you to stop there. stop there. I'm going to take a short break, and we're going to find out what happened at the barbecue.
Okay.
I have a feeling it changed things for you.
Yes.
Stand by.
Hi, I'm Janelle McCauley, the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, right here on the EWN Radio Network. Join me every Thursday to find out how you can take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the food you love. Each week, I'll bring you powerful and revealing interviews with doctors, health experts, and people just like you who have learned to create a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love. I look forward to serving you great content and healthy tips on Eat Great, Live Well Radio. And remember, if you can't listen to me live, you can always get the replay at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I invite you to join me each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, here on the EWN Radio Network, and let's create your healthy future together.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, CEO and founder of eWomen Network. I have a question to ask you. Do you have a message you're dying to tell the world? Have you always wanted to host your own radio show? Join our EWN Radio Network team and give your message the voice it deserves. For details, visit EWNRadioNetwork.com/host.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.
And we are back now with the amazing, the incomparable Sandra D. Robinson. All right, so
I love your rockin' music, by the way. I really like your rockin'
fun?
Theme.
I just
cool.
love it too.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah. That's just how I feel when I do this show. I just feel like rockin'. And I talk
like
to the rock stars like you. So, okay, so we just come from, here's the pic, that, like, it's sort of in a nutshell. So here you
yeah.
are
ended
working
in a really bad place.
Yeah, and about you. Well, you were 9 years, very successful TV soap opera star on, you know, in New York. You moved to L.A., and now you're homeless. And you're living on someone's dirty floor.
Yeah. Someone's dirty floor and was miserable, and I was having myself a nice, long, in-depth pity party. I'm not going to lie. I don't allow that anymore. My pity parties have to be timed, and I only have a certain amount of celebratory pity party allowance. But back then, I didn't know that it was a pity party. I just thought that the world was going to end. And I went out to a barbecue, looked at the girl that was giving the barbecue. She had a really cute car, really cute house, really cute clothes. Not to mention, she had a really cute husband. And I looked at her and I said, all right, what do you do? And she was an outside sales rep working in the real estate-related industry. And it was just taking off at that point. The real estate in Southern California was outrageous. All over the country was outrageous. It was the blowing up of the bubble, right? Mm. And I said, well, what do you have to do in order to do that job? Because I'll get you an interview. Long story short, I went in, acted as if I could do it. I got the job, and I actually had two job offers. I chose one, and I made close to 6 figures the first year, 6 figures my second year, and it showed me that I wasn't stupid. I had to get over being shy because sales reps get shut down. I mean, all my stuff was just right up in my face. I missed what I had been doing for so long, though, and when the opportunity came up, I actually got a phone call. And when I had been crying every day going to work because it really wasn't where I was supposed to be, I could do it. I made money. And the biggest blessing I learned is money doesn't make you happy.
Yeah.
I had money. I went from having nothing to having money, being able to get a nice car because they told me I had to have a nice car for the job. That's Southern California, right? They judge you on what you drive. It's very true. I was in Beverly Hills and Santa Monica, and it's true. There's a game you have to play when you're in that environment, and I had a nice car, I had cute clothes. I was just not happy. I was what I call starving, you know, Christians have a term they call starving the spirit, where the gifts that I had been giving, I wasn't using. I wasn't using any creativity. I wasn't really empowering anybody. I wasn't doing any of the things that I do now that make me want to get up in the morning. I was just making money. And it was great because I learned so much and I grew up a lot. And when I did come back to the acting world and I would go to those auditions and I would see the girls that were trying to be, you know, kind of intimidating to the other girls and trying to be the best what in the room, you know.
Yeah.
As you said, they tell you what you are, you know. I went back out there and I really just sort of looked at it from a different point of view. I took a step back. And this is what I really encourage women to do is take a step back and realize who you are. Because at that point, I knew who I was. And I couldn't be intimidated by some girl that walked in with longer legs. Good for her. She's got longer legs than me. Good. She's skinnier than I am. Wow, good for her. I'm something different.
So
and
who are
what
you?
What a different life.
So who are you? Who is Sandra D? You know, you're in it. What's your elevator speech for who you are, not what you are?
That's hard. That's kind of hard.
I know. You
with
can't
that, we know our business elevator speech. I don't know.
Well, the truth is, because with so many levels, if somebody asked me, I'd have to go all the way up to like the Empire State Building because I have so many aspects of me. So,
right?
Right. So, but when
I
you
say
you found yourself,
and I think it unfortunately sometimes takes finding yourself. It takes losing a lot. And that's what it did for me. But, I jokingly say that God has to sometimes hit me over the head with a 2x4 for me to actually realize that he's answering something.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember searching for faith. I had been on this quest for a while. And I finally, I think, found faith. And when I started to really realize that I could rely on that faith and on that there was a God that was looking out for me, that I wasn't completely alone. Because I lost a lot of those quote-unquote friends that I had at that time. If I couldn't go out and party with them, they weren't going to come and hang out with me.
Yeah.
So another lesson, who do you surround yourself with? You know, who are you really getting support from? And I started to become a little more discerning about that. And I love to be able to reach younger girls and help them with that right off the bat. Because if you can discern better than I did at a younger age, and surround yourself with people that support you and have that somewhere, even if your family, you know, doesn't support you, find it somewhere and really rely on that and know, find out who you are. And I'm all kinds of things. I'm a teacher. I'm a goofball. I'm a total brain nerd. I love animals. I talk to my horses. I'm a strange girl. We're all strange in beautiful ways.
Yeah.
And
now
so
you're also an entrepreneur. You've been alluding to this, what you're doing now. So you are making a difference in the lives of people in an area that is vital to business these days. So tell us about what you're doing now.
I get excited about that. Even in my signature, one of my signatures that I use for email says self-empowerment enthusiast. And I came up with that one day. I'm like, I like that. I'm going to throw that on there. I thought it was kind of goofy, but it sort of fits. I love to help people build what I've termed their powerful personal presence, which is, in essence, that really deep-rooted confidence that who you are, not just know what you're saying, know what you are representing, but know who you are underneath all of that. And that makes it such a difference. So the company that I started about 5 years ago now is called Charisma on Camera. And I'm kind of going through a little bit of a rebranding. And the new thing that we're rolling out, Charisma on Camera will still be there. But the new thing we're rolling out is called Horse-Powered Consulting. And it's just the same kind of coaching, but it's not completely focused on being on camera. It's really bringing that presence to everything you do. Like I said, if you're going into pitch for an investor, or you're going into a boardroom, or you're going to be speaking, public speaker, motivational speaker, or if you are really just any kind of presentation, even networking, knowing who you are will open so many doors for you and make your life a little bit happier, honestly, because you know what you are good at, and you can live in that space. And you surround yourself with people that support you in living in that space. And sometimes it's just that we're doing something a little bit off, and we just have to find the people that go, oh, no, I don't think that's very much you. This is what you should be doing. Actually listen to it, try it on, and go, yeah, that fits. And then things flow.
And it sounds to me, so it seems to me like you know, I mean, every website, you know, all entrepreneurs, every business has to have video these days. And so, you know, you work with people to create those videos, but it sounds like you're working kind of more from the inside out, like where you in your life were raised to work from the outside in, and that you kept saying act as if. You're actually, it sounds to me, what you do with your clients is you're working from the inside out, not act as if, but who are you, and
it's
then be that person.
Yeah, be that. Yes, it's not act as if, it's be that.
Yeah.
And giving them permission to be that. Mm. Sometimes even it has nothing to do with age. I have clients of all different ages. I mean, we were talking earlier about the hazards of being, you know, in the teens and being a teenager and even early 20s. But there are women of all different ages that I've worked with that just being given the permission to be who they are is life-changing for them.
Yeah. You know that song, that Colby Calais song about try, you know, I don't know if you've seen the video at all, but it's all about how...
I haven't seen it.
Oh, my God, it's so amazing, and this speaks to that.
I like the song.
Mm-hmm. You know the song I'm talking about, right? Well, the video...
Yes, but I'm not going to sing it.
Well, I just... No, oh, come on! Dang it!
No!
You know, I could sing in the car with the windows closed or in the shower. I have this fabulous voice, but whenever I get out and my for example, my kids hear me, they're like, "Oh my God!" I never know the words, but I know the words when I'm singing along with the artist. But the song is, as you know, and maybe some of you listening don't know, but it's all about how we try so hard to be accepted. We try, we spend money, we do our hair, we do, you know, the makeup, the whole thing. And Colby Calais is a beautiful woman with, you know, and you're watching this video and you're seeing all these faces and they have makeup on, and including her. Well, by the end, the makeup starts to come off of everybody, including her.
And then
she even removes takes out the highlights in her hair. So even that is gone. You know, you don't realize, you look at, you know, I mean, who doesn't have highlights or their hair colored these days, right? Including yours truly. But when you take it off and you just see that kind of dull brown or gray, and it's so interesting because that's what it's about. And to get to that, it's very scary to be that place because you're so vulnerable and we all believe that. Look, my mom, who I love dearly and was a wonderful mother, she was a girly girl and I was a tomboy, and she would say to me at age 12, she would say, "Just put on a little mascara and a little blush, just a little for me." I mean, seriously. And until this day, I don't feel pretty without it. You know, I feel... All right, I need a little mascara, a little of this, you know. It's that feeling of if I'm on the weekends in my weekend clothing, you know, with the sweats and the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's that there is still kind of a fear of, well, if someone sees me, I'll just have to make an excuse for it. I mean, how many of you do that?
There is something, I think, beautiful about a woman wanting to feel pretty. I think that's feminine and that's beautiful. But needing to look a certain way for other people is not healthy.
Exactly. And I think the test for that is, the truth is I come, you know, I dress up to come to work every day. I always wear makeup no matter what. And I don't do it because I want someone to say, "You look pretty." It's just sort of for me. So I think that's what you're saying. Is that how you feel now? I mean, do you do that for yourself too? Do you... When you put on makeup dressed up, what do you do it for? Who do you do it for?
I do it for me. I do it for me. I feel better when I do that. But I also will not lock myself in the house. If somebody comes to the door, for instance, I grew up with this. If my mother didn't have makeup on and someone came to the door, I remember her not going to the door.
Mm.
And I don't do that. You know, we had a friend pull up in a cute little convertible BMW, and I came walking out in the cold in my bathrobe with my hair, you know, like bedhead and no makeup. you know, I'm like, let's mess, you know, and they're looking at me like, why are you in the bathroom? Like, I just want to see the car. I would, you know, I'm not bothered by that. Yeah, I just woke up. This is what I look like. Okay. Mm-hmm. But
wow.
I'm not going to hide myself away. But then again, I'm not going to go to the store like that.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
it makes me feel a little bit better.
Especially, like, I always worry about the stars out there, you know, the celebrities in that respect, because they can't just go out and just be, because there's always somebody around shooting pictures and making them look like they death walked over, and, oh, my God, what's the latest, you know,
we see those, and that's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's so hard. It makes me feel so bad if I take a picture of someone, some celebrity, like Britney Spears, and go, you know, something nightmare, you know, weight gain nightmare or something, or upset over whatever, and she's got no makeup on. I'm like, look, you know, the girl goes to the gym too. We all go to the gym. When I leave the gym, I have no makeup on.
And that's
so,
it, yeah.
Give
her
a break. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, listen, I got to take one more short break, but when we come back, you've got some advice for girls, and I want to learn about what you're doing with your horses, and you are now not living in L.A., and we're going to find out where you moved to, and and this very cool husband of yours that you have. So stand by.
Yes.
We'll be back just after the short break.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Henderson, host of eWomen Radio Network's Idea Success with Sylvia. Listen live Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to get your ideas, dreams, goals, and plans out of your head and into action for profit and purpose. I'll interview people who've taken their ideas and made them reality, uncovering successes, challenges, and the lessons they've learned in the process. We'll hear from experts who help you get unstuck and be in action as you or your team put your ideas in motion. I'll share insights on the systems I use with my clients to get things done in business and life. Join me Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern or later at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I am bursting at the seams to share great ideas, introduce you to amazing people, and to be your catalyst for turning your dreams into dollars and your ideas into income and impact. That's Idea Success with Sylvia, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
Welcome back to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And I have to say, I am feeling very sad right now, because this interview, this conversation with my friend Sandra D. Robinson is about to come to an end, but I hope it's not the last time. Because I just love
talking. It's been fun. We're having fun.
This is fun, and it's inspiring. And I think it's really important for people to know as well that, you know, your journey from, you know, self-critical to self-acceptance was a rough road. Mm-hmm. But you did the work. You know, I'm sure if you're listening now and you're hearing those self-critical voices in your head and you just want to yank them out, it doesn't just happen, right? What did you do? What kind of work did you have to do to get to the self-acceptance level?
Well, golly. it was a combination of things. You've heard people maybe say that acting classes are like therapy. And in some ways they are, because you have to explore pieces of you in order to play characters. So, but the thing is, you don't really work through it. So I had a lot of performance coaching that was kind of opening up some stuff. I had a psychotherapist that I went to, had a couple of them. I had performance coaches that were always trying to get to the root of having me be real and be myself, and it was a battle. But what really came down to it was a combination of all of those things, which in essence, a lot of the best teachings, the stuff that really helped me the most out of all of those, whether it was a self-empowerment seminar or an acting class, that's actually, I started to incorporate that stuff, and that's how I started my business. Mm. So I have a lot of the stuff that helped me the most that I now incorporate into my workshops and my seminars and my corporate programs. And so I'm grateful for all of those things. But what really came about was a realization that someone said to me, and I thought this was, I heard two things, and I'm just going to say these two things that I think would be so, they were so beneficial to me. One came from an acting coach. Because remember I said I was trying to grow up and trying to be perfect. I see women doing this as old as 60 or 70 when they want to get up in front of a video camera. They want to be perfect. Women want to lose the weight. They want to be perfect before they do anything. They want to say things perfectly. We a lot of times are programmed to do that. My acting coach said to me when I was trying to do a scene perfectly, he said, "We are not attracted to perfection." And I was really hurt because I thought, well, what do you mean I'm not perfect? Like, I just didn't get it. And he said, we as human beings are drawn to the brokenness in other people. That's what humans do. Stop trying to be perfect. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so true. Even if you look at our pop icons, the biggest pop icons over the history of our American culture, a perfect example is Marilyn Monroe. Beautiful, yes, beautiful. Perfect, by no means. There were a lot of beautiful people at that time that were they were pushing through the system of the movies. She is still showing up on the covers of magazines because there was a brokenness that women understood and men wanted to fix. But it's a brokenness. So to try to be perfect is completely futile. No one is perfect except God. And as far as I remember, that job is taken. So be who you are, imperfections and all, and appreciate all of the... You know, I appreciate my muscular butt. Hated it growing up, but I'm like, I'm glad I have it, you know? There are things that we just have to make peace with and go, okay, that's part of who I am. It may not be perfect in other people's eyes, but it's me, and it's perfectly suited for me. The other thing that I learned was those voices, the self-criticism that we call it really isn't self. It's not our voice. Mm-hmm. So when those voices pop up in your head, and tell you that you're too fat, too skinny, too short, too stupid, whose voice is it? It's a great question. When that voice pops up, whose voice is it? Is it the bullies from high school, from grade school, from wherever? Is it your mom? Is it your dad? Is it your ex-husband? Whose voice is telling you that? Because if it's not yours and it's not God's, it has no reason to be listened to. So send it back.
If you were to go back to your high school years and you can see you, and what would you say? What would you say to that teenager back then? And again, this to me is what, you know, for girls now who are listening to this, I believe what you would say to that girl, that Sandra D back then, would be for what girls could hear and take that advice now.
Oh, boy. You're beautiful as you are. You're smart. And you are clever enough to be able to get anything that you want and do anything that you want.
Hmm.
It is possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just that simple. It is possible.
And to the and to those girls who are being bullied, or bullying, because you know bullying often they're victims themselves at home.
Those that hurt are hurting usually.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how do they step out? Because your mom said just laugh at them. So what do you want to say to them?
Laugh at them. She said laugh at them. They're jealous, and that's what she said. They're jealous. And yet I was told that I wasn't anything to be, you know what I mean? I was getting mixed signals from that. And I think that's one of the things that I wouldn't do. I wouldn't say, oh, those girls are just jealous. Because then I would try to dumb down my look so that they wouldn't be jealous of me. Because if they were jealous of the way I looked, then I'm going to try to be accepted and try to dumb that down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it
right.
can create all kinds of things. I don't want people to be, what did I do that they're jealous of me? I blamed myself it was crazy, the stuff that would go through my head. So it's tough when you're in the situation of being bullied. It's really crappy. To know that, again, the voices that are coming at you are not, they're not God's. The person that is doing that, it helps to understand where the other person might be coming from. So that even in the process, you can work on actually forgiving that person. Because if you know in retrospect that the life is awful, I even said that knowing where how my father grew up, much later in life, we discovered that he had had this really abusive generations and generations of abuse in his family. And he had a gruffness to him that I used to just hate growing up. He had a tone of voice that was like a barking dog, you know. Mm. But he never hit me. But coming from where he came from, that's a huge step. But it also helped me understand why he would say some of the things that he said, why he would sound with that growl. You know,
right.
That was what he had been conditioned to do. And unfortunately, girls that are bullying or boys that bully, they're conditioned to do that. And one of my good friends has this happening right now with one of her children. And the father, it's a boy that's doing bullying, and the father does bullying as an adult.
Yeah.
So he's really just doing what he sees.
Mirroring.
And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough,
but it gets better, right?
It's temporary.
It gets better.
It gets better because it's temporary. And
right.
That's the hard thing when you're in school and you're going through a daily basis of abuse, you know, and bullying. It's not easy. Every situation is different and has to be handled differently, I believe. There's no blanket statement for how to handle when your kid's being bullied or when you're being bullied. But it is temporary.
Mm-hmm.
And in retrospect, I look back and go, wow, I really do kind of wonder what happened to those girls that used to hit me and beat me and throw things at me.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling they don't have a life that's as happy as mine.
Yeah. And I think it's also very important to know that everything in life is a lesson. You mentioned it, that all that dark time when you were homeless and all that was part
yeah.
of your lesson, and that's part of what takes you to where you are today. And if you can just get through it and say, what am I learning from this? What is the reason that this is in my life? Just know it's all part of the journey, and it'll be
yeah.
okay. It's going to be okay. One more question for you. Horses, we're about to run out of time. Tell me about your horses. Can you tell us what your plans are
for
that?
Yeah, I can
okay.
briefly.
Go ahead.
Horse-powered consulting is the confidence training that I've been doing, but now we're going to be offering an all-day submersion with horses. So horses will reflect exactly how you're showing up. They do amazing things. Talking about bullying, at some point I'd love to have a program for kids that are being bullied, to help them kind of gain that confidence and work with a 1,200-pound animal and understand that they can be loved and they can be accepted and they can be a great leader. And it's amazing stuff. And horsepower.net is going to be where you can go to kind of keep up with the programs once they get rolling. We're in setup phase right now for the horse program, but the consulting has already started. So it's exciting. I'm really excited because it's a very natural approach. And the changes are just that they're incredible to watch.
Right. And the thing is, too, just this again, going back to the journey, all of this that's happened, this road that you took, this journey you took, and now look what you're doing. You're taking what you've learned. You've become sensitive and empathetic to it. And now you are creating a program and in your own business as well to help people build confidence. And so I thank
yeah.
you, Sandra D, for all you're doing now, for making it through, and for, you know, sharing your wisdom and being so open and opening up your heart with us today.
Well, thank you. It's been so much fun, and I love your topics of your show, so I just think you're doing something great here. Thank you, Phyllis.